allow ourselves to become spacious. Breathe into the solar system as the solar system breathes us. Breathe into the galaxy as the galaxy breathes us. We breathe into the spaciousness of God as we rest in His silence, His first word. You must remember why you came here. You came here to work on yourself, and only on yourself. And you must thank everyone who gives you the opportunity. We can go home now. Home, and you must enjoy it. I brought two friends with me tonight. This is my first volume of the psychological commentaries on the teachings of Gurdjieff and Dostoevsky that I waited 2 weeks to arrive from Toronto by mail. The excitement in me at the discovery of the existence of these was electric, absolutely electric. This volume went everywhere with me. It was my friend. I had it in the car with me everywhere. I took it with me. I went into a doctor's office. What's it going to be, People magazine or this? I could open it anytime, under any conditions, and read a sentence, and it would be stunningly appropriate to the moment. I also carried it, not just for information, but to build the impression in my own consciousness of a relationship with this. I found everything I was looking for in here, and it went everywhere with me. And there wasn't a day that went by that I didn't look at this. Until those first volumes just fell apart, and just now it's like when I look at them, I look at old friends, and I can see the man who stepped into the ring with these teachings, and I can see what's left. How did it happen? Well, something happened before this, and this is what I want to make plain to us. It was this, Lessons in Truth. This is the foundation on which my personal consciousness is built. And this is the foundation that I was living under when I went to Unity School and heard on my very first day of metaphysics class. And now I would like to introduce you to the five volumes of the psychological commentaries on the teachings of Gurdjieff and Dostoevsky. I had been familiar with Gurdjieff and Dostoevsky. I didn't know there were any commentaries. But this was my foundation in beginning to work with the commentaries in a serious way. It wasn't like this is over here, and the commentaries are over here, and the Bible's over here. They were one thing, with angles of intersection, angles of view. So what has come to be here is just short of miraculous. But it's because the principles were adhered to that the manifestation occurred. The principles that are illustrated and offered in here are the basic Christian principles of mind science and of relationship to the greater mind that the work calls, we call it the mind of Christ in here. It's the same thing, the mind of God, the great mind in which all of this is occurring. This is the rules. that bring the Bible to a pinpoint clear focus on a life of faith, a life built on a rock-solid foundation of faith. This is great, but without this, I don't think it has much influence on people. This is a Christian, metaphysical understanding of the laws of mind science, laws of manifestation. And with this as a foundation, and the security and understanding that come from that teaching, this teaching can open up wide and give us an opportunity to dismantle the cobbled together homemade self Father Keating speaks of that the work calls the false self. Why did we come here? Well, in some degree, we came here to work on ourselves. And we read that, and we agree, I'm going to work on myself. And only on myself. And I'm going to thank everybody who gives me the chance just as soon as I'm able to remember that. That's a hard thing to internalize. But when you're standing on the rock of faith, when you understand that God loves you with a love that just is incomprehensible, then there's a freedom to participate in the dismantling of the false self that is just extraordinary. Because now the false self doesn't feel at risk anymore. It learns that it's participating in greater and greater and greater universes, but participating not as an isolated little fact, but as a beloved manifestation of the living God who created a you. And there'll never be another you. This is the unique manifestation of the human species, each of us. But behind the mask of the separate self, the false self, behind all the eyes that justify themselves and explain the reason why we need to be identified just now, deeper than that is the presence that we opened with, that we felt together. That presence is always here. That presence is truth. The truth is silence. The truth is just presence. The truth doesn't need elaboration or thinking or explaining or justifying. It just is the case. And when we slow down and let go, we come to be one with the case, one with the condition of all conditions. And in that moment, we stand free. We stand free as what we were created to be, manifestations of light, manifestations of human possibility. And a second later, and I'm putting this in quotes for those who hear by recording, the devil, quote, quote, the devil trolls a distraction past us, and we bite. We grab on, and we're identified. Now, if the work is our guide, that won't discourage us at all. Because the work says, well, you couldn't help that, could you? No, I couldn't, because it was what? Mechanical. It's mechanical, it's a reactive spring. It got loaded up when I was a kid. So the work says, well, if you can't help it, you could will it. What? I could will my reactivity, my negativity, my depression, all these things that happen to a person that they didn't plan on having. Well, you could do what the work says. You could either kind of thrash around and try to fight your way out of whatever you're in, but that usually just ends up entangling us more. So the work teaches us, well, I can will, I can say yes to this no in me. I can say yes to the no that's seeming to vex me. And if I remember my work principles and the aphorisms that are so valuable, you must remember why you came here. You came to work on yourself and only on yourself, and you must thank everyone who gives you the opportunity. The more we re-remember that, the more we practice thanking the person for showing us where that reactivity is, because let's face it, if it's in there, it has to come up. We weren't born, our spirits weren't like that when we were born. And if it does come up, it's because it was in there. There's no use pretending, well, I wasn't really angry. I didn't mean a thing by that, bullshit. When we will what we can't help and realize that it's revealing something of our conditioning, and that conditioning has been imprisoning us, and it doesn't need to be explained, and it doesn't need to be justified, and we don't need to look for the smoking gun in our mother's rejection or our father's control. We just notice, this is called being identified. Wow, being identified is not I. Voices making sentences in my head about other people, that's not I. Explanations, let's say you're going to be late somewhere, possibility that you could be late. And here come the self-justified, well, I had a flat tire. And they just keep going, waiting for us to catch on to one. But the point is, we can't be explained and we can't be justified. These are mechanical responses. And the only intelligent thing to do with them is what the work says, is to bear them and bring the light of consciousness into them. The work is very clear that the light does all the work. The light of consciousness does all the work. Mr. Nichols says, this work is Christ. This work is Christ. Being identified with our, well, let's just put it the way someone from Asia might put it, from India or a Buddhist. Name and form, namarupa. If it's got a name and you can sense a form, that's not it. So clearly, if you become a skilled self-observer and are able to bear what you cannot help and will what you cannot help and see it and make it conscious, paint it with light, and you realize, oh my God, that's just something with a name and a form. It's just words and images passing through my superficial consciousness, and it's going to change and pass away. So repeated explorations of the experience of being one of these bring attention into the hidden areas of the unconscious. Light comes into the darkness. The prologue to John's gospel becomes real in our lives. The light of consciousness comes into the darkness of our unconsciousness. And our unconsciousness just can never figure it out. And more importantly, can never overcome it. The light has already won the day. The deal has been done. Now it's up to each of us to recapitulate that victory in our own experiences by making wise and healthy choices, not according to our whims and inclinations and our imprinting, but as people who are under authority. People always say, well, Jesus is, he speaks as one with authority. And the centurion recognize, oh, you're a guy under authority. That's why you were able to heal my servant. You're working for the boss. So the authority that's in here is descended from an authority that's way beyond the earth, way beyond time and space. And it's an authority that's trustworthy, that we can go, yes, sir. The work says, jump. How high, sir? Not, well, in Buddhism, we don't have to jump. We didn't have to do that when I was doing TM. This is a unique offering. It is proven, in my experience and in many of yours, it has proven itself. But I want to remind you again, it did not come by itself. It came founded on the foundation of Christian principles and faith that we find in, I hope, repeated and ongoing readings of Lessons in Truth. I hear people say, oh, I read that. Oh, I didn't read it. But drilled it into my gray matter so that it wouldn't be a matter of figuring anything out. And by that time, I was capable, when I saw what the work had to give me, of doing the same thing. Yes, sir. The work proved itself to me in the first weeks or so of working with my teacher, Ed Rabel. You've heard me say that Barbara and I weren't getting along very well at times. And of course, when two people are unloading the unconscious at the same time and don't exactly know what's going on, it can be very, very confusing and very, very intense. Now, I had a lot of repressed anger. I didn't know it was there. And it seemed, even if it was revealed as anger, it was perfectly justified. So one day, came home from work, and we stepped into the ring right away. And all of a sudden, the work came to me, and self-observation clicked on like a Klieg light, and I could see maybe 5 different responses I could make, and I could also see through the work's eyes what would be my karma with each of those responses. You think you're gonna like this, Tim? And for the first time in my life, from the time I was a little boy, I didn't answer an angry woman back, and I didn't explain anything. I just stayed there and let her talk. It was stunning to me. My dad would react and get out. All the guys I knew reacted and got out. The work gave me a means of staying there and of standing in my experience. I wasn't quite welcome yet, but I could see clearly the difference between I, the eternal witness, the always present silent witness, and the kaleidoscope of offerings that my brain was making to me to get this crap straightened out right now. Am I talking to the right people? So life is never gonna lay down and go your way. The math is totally against us. That means that every day, many, many, many times a day, we're gonna have an opportunity to work on ourselves. Now, if we waste a lot of time self-justifying, explaining things, figuring people out, or projecting onto them and not even knowing it, we're not gonna really go very fast in the work. But if we really wanna get down to it, it's all below the neck. Every bit of it is in the body. It's all about energy and nothing but energy. There's no subject matter. There's no name or form. The names and the forms and the subject matter are tools that help us access the fact that we are energetic beings manifesting through material world in the company of other energetic beings who likewise are manifesting and who have touchy energy. See, a true human being, in their truest sense, is centered, present, simply here. You remember how Bernadette carried herself, or how Father Thomas carries himself? Present. They weren't chatty. They weren't clever, although they're both some of the funniest people I've ever known in my life. There was a presence, and there's a witness in the way they carried themselves. That presence is a witness to us that it's nothing we can talk about in words, nothing we can explain, nothing we can retain, nothing that's an accomplishment, really, and no credit for it. You wake up. And when you're awake, it's not the end of the game, because you still have all these opportunities to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. But it's all below the neck. So at times when I've worked with people that are studying the work, I've had to remind them of what Ed Rabel reminded me, that you don't have to cling to self-remembering. You don't have to be afraid if you get identified. By the time you notice anything, it's already done its work. By the time you recognize that you have self-remembered, you already got everything you need. You don't need to cling to it. And you don't need to tell a lot of people, you know, I self-remembered. There's this thing about keeping your peace until you really get that you get it. It's good to talk with others in the work, but one of the hazards I've had in the work I do is that I would often see things about Tim, and an I in me, which saw itself as a function called teacher, would quickly seize the idea and figure out how it was going to tell it before it had fully embodied it in its own experience. So getting that we get it is a long time prospect. This is a life work. If you're in it, be in it for life. Don't pitch your tent at the unitive state. Bernadette says we're going deep here. But it's about energies. The ideas are in service to energies. Everything we learn in the commentaries is in service to learning to be with first, second, and third force in a creative way, and not to lose force in a useless way. The second law of thermodynamics says that as things cool off, they dissipate. They tend to cool off. Well, we want to stay hot in the work. We don't want to lose force. And so we're willing what we cannot help, thanking inside the people who trigger us, is a great way to save force, by not losing it, by not getting caught. Every time you lose force toward another person, let's say, and you lose your center and you get reactive to it, every single time you create, let's say, ripples in the pond of human consciousness that go out into other people and that reflect back to us, and we're going to deal with them. That time I spoke of when I didn't answer Barbara back, I saw that every one of the choices I had before me would have ended up more trouble, more pain for more people. And learning to be silently present and bear the awful energies that come up when unresolved anger shows itself. Whoa, it gets hot. I went to see Thomas one time, just pretty crazy, almost over the top, with the horrors of founding a church in a woman. And he said, and I mean, I was really, and he said, "That's a strong feeling. You can feel that." Whoa. That's willing what we can't help. Saying yes to whatever feeling is coming up and whatever condition or circumstance causes it to arise. Realizing that all these names and forms that cross our brain and reactivity are zip. They're nothing. Our life is below our neck. Bernadette says, you got to get your attention down into the hara. This is the center of the body. Now, we take in ideas in order to learn to recognize the places we lose attention or lose force, And we learn all these concepts, but please do not store the work up in notebooks. And please don't systematize it and memorize the systems, because that center that's doing that is co-opting the heart. It's saying, oh, the work is all about information, and it's not. The information is a tool, but incarnation is what we're interested in. We're interested in getting back into where we were as babies in the body. Now, it's challenging in a culture like ours that is based, so much of its advertising, its political discourse, on vaporous concepts that have no fundamental place in reality. It's kind of hard to abstract yourself in order to really do the work. But Mr. Gurdjieff gives us a wonderful tool in that he refers us to the what he calls the terror of the situation. The terror. Now, you didn't say the inconvenience, the worrisome aspect of creation. Why would he choose a word like terror? Jesus uses words like the master comes back and finds the servants weren't doing anything, so they got beaten. What are these trying to tell us? They're trying to tell us that it is not okay to be asleep and caught in the dualistic, reactive, horizontal pattern with objects that appear and disappear in time, with circumstances that appear and disappear in time. The abiding presence of God is in our hearts, the abiding spirit in our bellies. Right here, you know, your inner taste and your will are down here. This is where we know that we know. You know, we're pretty smart people. We're going to figure this out. I would suggest abandoning the enterprise as quickly as possible. A human being is not to figure out how stuff works. A human being is meant to fulfill their purpose as a human being and become the manifestation of love. We're down here on this far down planet in the ray of creation to learn a lesson. And each of us has a unique part of that lesson, but ultimately it's to realize that we are made for love, made by love, and made of love. Often we get so, we're subject to the seduction of navel gazing when we do the work. Introspection to the point of forgetting our relationship to the greater whole. You know, as we came in out of the silence, we talked about feeling the breath of the solar system. Feel it, your nerves, your heartbeat, whoa, breath. And feeling the galactic presence. There's no need to go beyond that. That's far enough. But that context gives us an understanding that we're not here to build edifices to our personality's wonderfulness. We're not here to fix the body politic. We're not here to accumulate great piles of wealth. We're here to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And this is our work. I work and my Father works. This is our work. And I thank everyone who has helped me work. Now, when I talk about our marriage, that's where I see me. That's the place I'm closest to another human being in their ordinary humanity, to be triggered in countless tiny ways. It's not that you get done being triggered, it's that you don't buy. It's like, oh, there it goes again, that eye. Ooh, look at that one go. Our daughter had a name that she gave to one of her eyes. She imagined this eye to have a very short little hospital gown on with the buns sticking out. And she called it her short patience. But see, you have a little fun with it, you cartoon it a little bit, you get, you know, I was so sick of myself justifying it, but I did not acquit it. I was a victim. Poor me. No victims. Everything's a lesson. Now, if you want the world's mind and don't want to do this, just try to put it back on. You're ruined if you've looked this far. For life asleep, life in the dream of the Matrix. But you're well along. This church is a phenomenon that brings its residents, its communicants, well along on this path into the mystery, to where we let go of the need for explanations, let go of the need to be thought of as one way or not thought of in another. These become of no interest to us at all, because something far more interesting is downloading into our experience, downloading into our hearts, and it's self-validating and self-justifying, and we don't need to explain it to anybody, and it doesn't matter to us if anybody gets that we get it. It's just like, oh my God, this is real. Yeah, it's absolutely real. So mind science will teach us that what we focus our attention on will grow in power and manifestation. If we have identified energy in a relationship with somebody, and we keep reacting along that conditioned line, that's going to get more and more dense. It's going to grow more and more. If we practice non-identifying, that too becomes a new habit. And we learn to remove our attention from getting caught on objects and to simply bear it. And that creates deeper impressions. Until moment by moment, situation by situation, day by day, imperceptibly, the light seeps down into the deepest crevices of the unconscious. And one day we just notice, hey, I'm happy. I'm not identified. The thoughts are still there, but there's nobody paying attention to them. We were programmed when we were born. If we were in India, there'd be different programming. 100 years ago, different programming. Same species, programming based on the times. This is a deep programming discipline. This is seeing the programs, letting the light into them, getting inner separation, practicing the feeling of self-remembering, and creating brand new programs on purpose instead of the ones that were copied into our gray matter by default, by our family situations or things that happened in the world. So we're working here not for self-perfection. Now, take a look at your eyes right now. If any of them are looking like a deer in the headlights, well, just notice that. We're here for self-transcendence. Self-transcendence doesn't mean you get sad and long-faced and morose and withdrawn. Self-transcendence is spontaneity. It allows us to be drawn into engagements with all kinds of people in all kinds of situations and not get caught, not lose force, not exchange force unconsciously with people who may be exchanging force with you. So these three forces of our words in a book, until they become places in our consciousness where we're free to move around and exchange energy intelligently, in a way that doesn't hurt people, in a way that doesn't make us lose force. We're given one tool that has been a favorite of mine called Sly Man. Sly Man. If you look into it and make it an exploration for yourself, you'll see it's a great gift. Because Sly Man doesn't tell everything he knows. It's almost like he's a framework you can put in your mind. And you can interact with the world through Sly Man's kind of consciousness. So Sly Man never meets resistance with resistance. He knows second force to second force is a dead short. That's not going to go anywhere. I hear echoes, resist not evil. Agree quickly with your adversary. Sly Man understands that you can, you know, there's a Japanese martial art called Aikido. And in Aikido, the opponent's energy is used to defeat him without hurting him and without being hurt. So when we find, let's say, a load of second force coming at us, somebody's mad at us, somebody's telling us, as one friend said, how the cow ate the cabbage, what's your habitual response? Well, if you've been exploring yourself, you'll know. But there is a kind of response that, let's say, it's based in third force, based in the bigger picture, solar consciousness, let's say, or self-remembering. So that instead of defeating us, this force becomes an agent of our own transformation. And we let it in, and we bear it, almost like Christ on the cross. Because we've opened ourselves to practice the way of conscious labors and what? Intentional suffering. I was in the throes of suffering one time, and I was praying. I was on the cross, and this is the Roman soldier, and I asked God, how far does this go? And I heard, to the bone, I want it all. And I realized, yeah, I want to let go of it all. If it's false, if it's not truth, if it's not reality, let's go. Let's have it. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. That's third force, penetrating the reactive second force and aching with the pain of humanity. See, that's how we participate in Christ's own suffering, by bearing the energies in our bodies that we would rather be projecting onto other people or stuffing because they're so uncomfortable. So in this prayer to God, I said, I can't suffer anymore. And he said, you entered into the way of conscious labor and intentional suffering. Would you be surprised that there is some? And offer you this. That's that the Buddha would have, that life on earth is suffering. The veil of tears in the rosary, this veil of tears, valley of death. Do we expect not to suffer? I hope not. Because this can be the most creative thing we do. So enter in and incarnate in the intensity of your inner world. To allow the presence of God through the gifts of work ideas to hold you in place while these energies are being converted into life and light. The mind would have it, with its dualistic point of view, is it right or is it wrong? Who's in, who's out? Whose fault is it? What happened? Who made this go like this? The spirit doesn't care. Spirit is not interested in that part. It has a whole other world that it's participating in, whole other agenda that is characterized by the idea of third force, which embraces both the first force of my need to be loved and the second force of the energy that's coming toward me that may not feel loving right then, but which I tell you, you'll later see was God's love disguised as opposition that came to liberate us. So you've got a human being, it's mechanized. You have a teaching that leads you into the dark corners and gives you something to do with it. And every tendency in us is to try to be overcomers, to try to accomplish a win, or to get on top of it. And it's just like Thomas said, no, this is going down into our helplessness. It's like step one of the 12 steps. I'm powerless. And then you get down into levels of powerlessness where you realize, boy, this world is really screwed up. And then you see the seduction to talk about that, to talk about the way things are and what ought to happen. Well, you know, they've been that way before. If you go back into Ecclesiastes, goes around, we call recurrence in the work. Same things with different costumes and speeds. This world is not for changing. This world is not for fixing. This world is a seedbed for energies that are necessary and useful to being awakened and to be transformed. The seduction of making conditions an object of our attention is a really difficult seduction. A man named De Caussaud wrote a book that the title tells you everything. Abandonment of Self to Divine Providence. The abandonment of self. In a self-bound culture, you'll find precious support for that view, but in the mystics, in the Christian mysteries, you'll find infinite support for that view. Now, the question is, for most of us, over and over again, how do I keep myself interested in this? If my life is going to follow my attention, how am I going to get my attention to stay in the fact that I came here to work on myself onto this planet? I was born from Marge Cook to work on myself and only on myself. How do I keep my attention in that? Well, the terror of the situation helps. Seeing my mechanicalness is a great help. Oh my God, there he goes again. Really? Who just said that? What was that? Voices criticizing other voices. And remember we said it's all below the neck? My teacher before Bernadette said, he called himself the headless horseman. He says, I am the headless horseman. I act without consideration. When I compare myself to some deliberate lives, I become afraid of my own softness. Therefore, be the body only, feeling into life. Surrender the mind into love until the body dissolves in light. Dare this ecstasy and never be made thoughtful by birth and experience and death. So here goes the world past us, all these events, and here's the overburden in our minds sweeping by. And we can learn to drop underneath that, to get under that stuff. Don't wait for it to go away. Just drop down into your breath, into your hara, incarnate, and do it again, and do it again, and do it again, and especially when it's uncomfortable. Especially when there's every reason that you don't want to. One of the best work tools I've been given is love what it hates. We're doing spiritual jujitsu here. If it hates that, one of my other work teacher, Marvin Anderson, says, I starve them out. I won't do it because I want something that they can't give me. I want something that no eye can ever deliver the goods on. And so over and over and over, seemingly ad nauseum, I'm identified again. So what? So what? Let go. I had a friend that was waking up at the same time I was. And there'd be periods where we'd both be asleep for weeks. And then we'd wake up. And it's like, oh my God. Oh, do you know what I'm talking about? I've been asleep. And my response was, oh, thank God I'm awake again. And this person's conditioning had them going, oh, I fell asleep again. You see, that eye was working for the devil. It was working to keep my friend in prison. That self-accusing, self-loathing eye wanted to sink that moment of self-remembering, which was evidence of God's love for that person. The Trinity, known as the law of three in the work, is the fundamental basis for all manifestation and motion. By calling it the law of three, Gurdjieff has taken a lot of the Christian superstructure off it, the spooky overtones that it has when the tradition, covered as it is with layers of old varnish, is the law of three. And he takes what would be the Holy Trinity and he slides it as the law of three into the European intelligentsia of the time. And as a result of that clever gesture, we're here today working with the law of three. But now our job is to bring it back into an understanding of the most holy Trinity. It's all threes all the way up and all the way down. And it's an incarnational gesture in which we manifest this physical body and realize it as the gift of Christ, the literal gift of Christ. So I'm going to stop talking with this, and then we'll open the floor. This is a unique teaching. It doesn't need to be justified or explained or compared to other teachings. It's a unique teaching. It needs to be followed. Centering prayer is a unique teaching. Lessons in truth is itself a unique teaching. Each of them is a wonderful gift by itself. But for some reason, remembering that things are happening in the only way they can and man does not do, for some reason, those three strands got woven together into an obviously fruitful mix here. Wow. Each by themselves good, but together, brought together in this community of practice. Oh my goodness. What a rare grace we are sharing in. And how grateful I am to Beverly and you should, thank you, Laurie. And Laurie and Pamela and Donald and anybody else who they've made it their own. They've bought in. They drank the Kool-Aid, as one guy said. And I've had the privilege and the pleasure of watching these beings transform. You didn't used to be like this. You didn't smile like that for no reason at all. Yeah. So, if you're ever challenged about any of this, we just don't talk about it. These are unprofitable conversations, trying to convert others. I wanted to save the world, but geez, I'm in it. So I guess it's not saved till I get fully worked on myself. It's so much easier to work on Trump. You know, how do I ought to be? Well, you know what? This world will not be the completed manifestation of the Christ until each one of us is in. Until that Christ light has embodied itself in each of our physical bodies, and we recognize it as that, not as an attainment, but as a graceful gift that was ordained for us by our Father before we were even born. This is a divine appointment we're sharing here, and it's an amazing thing to be part of. So I'm grateful for all of you who made it possible to keep it going. But now, what about you? How deep can you take this? How serious do you want to play the game of life? How much would you like to ease the load of our common Father endlessness? How much would you like to bless the world with one more happy person who can just smile and live page 10 without calling a lot of attention to herself or himself? Nobody can exercise our own will for us. We can make a good fake of it. We can be a great in a second line group. But you know, right where we are with God inside, where we only know, that's where what the work calls inner sincerity. But I like Bernadette's statement a little bit. Scathing self-honesty. Scathing. Take no prisoners. There's nothing in there you want to protect. And that light wants to do something through you that we can't even imagine. So I would just ramble away an hour of your time. Let's find out if there's anything that we could make use of you for in responding to questions. I'm better at responding to questions than I'm making statements, although you wouldn't just know that. Lotus, please. Let's get her a microphone, Jack.
I just want to say thank you, Tim, for being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Lotus.
I have no questions.
Okay. But, you know, here's the deal. Like I told you, I tried as best I could to follow the instructions and not my inclinations. And the instructions said, if you want this, you're going to have to bring some other people along. How high, sir? Here we are. So that understanding was converted to a wish, which you will find is the strongest ally you have if you can wish for something. It's a vacuum. God wants to fill those vacuums in. And we have a real hunger for God. God has a hunger for us. It's a dynamite combo. It will not be denied, but it will not come instantly either. It's going to take you some time. Patience being the mother of will, we've got plenty of it. Go ahead, Jackie.
First of all, I want to thank you for being my teacher for 20 years. Over the last 4 months, in an evolving thing, I've come to see the value of having a work tool chest with a lot of different work tools in it. And to have the work come up to meet an incoming impression, that you're, especially where you are not expecting it, and realize that that's the inner separation that allows you to not remain in sleep. It's an awakening moment. I stood up on a Sunday in late September to talk about a situation, an event that was happening for me, that my son had called me one day when I was driving and totally asleep with the words, "This has to stop," which had to do with the fact that I was sending lots of clothes to my brand new grandbaby. And I was completely innocent in that moment because I was just doing what it thought it was supposed to do as a loving grandmother with a baby half away across the United States.
And a novice grandmother at that.
Well, half away across the United States. But in that moment, even though there was nothing to calculate, I hadn't calculated this at all, and I was met with this, and I could hear my daughter-in-law in the background talking, and I was absolutely shocked. But the work immediately came up to me to self-observe, not to react, because normally I would have gone straight into anger, and that would have dissipated any opportunity to work. So I started observing this sadness, just a sadness. And I noted, well, that's an interesting energy. Normally, it would be anger. And I recognized the sadness was underneath the anger, and it had probably always been there.
Yes.
But I knew I was still identified. I was definitely identified. But I kept observing just a kind of a coldness, almost like a part of me detached from itself. I did not want to deal with it. And I really didn't answer Andrew. I just said, thank you, I've got to go, I'm in traffic. Which is what I continue to observe, how much avoidance there is in my personality. It does not want to go to it if it can avoid it in some way. And that's probably where anger has come in the past. But I just kept wishing to bear this and to be willing to see and feel the pain.
Yeah.
And over time...
Intentional suffering.
Yes. And to recognize at some level what a gift was being given to me, and at some level recognizing this is not a short-term gift. Mm-hmm. And for me to stand up in this community, particularly on a Sunday, and reveal a weakness that I haven't thought and felt my way through yet is a big deal. I needed help from others, and I got it immediately from this community. And however, I kept feeling not wanting to deal with it, and not dealing with it, procrastinating, figuring out how I could avoid Andrew. And I did. He would call and I wouldn't even answer the phone. And that went on for a long time. And there were moments when I would say to myself, well, I just won't buy them anything anymore. And I saw that and I thought, well, that's interesting. Let's see how long that goes on. And then Andrew announced that they were going to come here for Christmas. It's not our year to have them here for Christmas with this angel of a grandbaby. And I made excuses not to see them. But they've been here this past week. They persisted and they came. But as this evolved, different work ideas came up to meet me. And the aim, actually, that we've had this last week, that if you really understood, you wouldn't disagree, was enormously valuable to me this whole time. I went out and intentionally bought clothes for her. I didn't order them online. I actually went to a shop and bought clothes. And I looked at that. What was my motivation for this? There was probably some less than kind motivation in there somewhere.
As long as you see it, who cares?
Absolutely. But I wanted to give this family something. And also, I began calculating second force. Because what if this came up again? It was, in a way, I was inviting it. So the spirit was there the whole time. This is, if you can't change it, will it? I wished to understand. I mean, really to have knowledge and pray that my being would be in a place where I could actually take these impressions coming in and have them land in a truly new place in me.
And have a good time doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're the human species being healed of separation through these little scenarios, these little motifs that play out from the great archetypes in our lives.
So it happened. I handed the package to my daughter-in-law because that's where the fire hose was coming out. And she said immediately, "This is too much." And I saw it coming in. And I really did not, I didn't want to be completely silent. I wanted to say something in that moment, but I didn't want it to be angry or hurt or antagonizing, which is really
a
challenge.
Well, let's not get too much story here.
Okay. But what happened is she explained something about her own background that I had not previously even heard. So I usually would have been so identified by that time that I would have been reactive completely. I understood her. But backing up, I also understood me in a way that I had not before. So I've always thought that this had to do with me looking out at the outside world, understand them, and then you wouldn't disagree. It also had to do with understanding me, those buffers that are still in there.
Everything gets solved. Self-observe, non-identify, self-remember, and everything just works out.
So it was beautiful. The whole thing was beautiful. I saw love. I saw care. I saw just a happy family, a beautiful family.
And you stayed somewhat conscious. Yeah. Who else? Please.
I'm just I was so happy and relieved to see you hold up the lessons in truth and the commentaries, because I think it may have been last spring or earlier this summer you brought up lessons in truth, and I just decided I wanted to make that my friend again, because I hadn't really studied it since I took the class 10 years ago. And so when we were traveling this summer, I took that. That was like my main book. And on, you know, many miles of hiking, I would pick, you know, a denial a day or an affirmation a day. And when you're hiking and, you know, it's a steep incline and, you know, there's just physical suffering, like make those affirmations and denials my friends. And they're still with me. And I found myself just in a situation where I was needing to grab onto a rope, and I thought, and I just remember, it was like two nights ago, and I just remember the mind just going, I need something. There is no evil. There is no absence of life substance or intelligence anywhere. And it's just like those ideas just came in and they rescued me.
Sure.
And
sure.
I was able to just know that I was safe. And that's something that whenever I remember coming into your office, and from time to time you would always remind me that I was safe. And I used to wonder, why is he telling me that I'm safe? Some eyes in here.
Because you're safe?
Yes. Because I was like, oh, that's true. It's actually true.
Yep.
But, and then there was a critic eye that came in and said, well, technically, that's not really a work idea. And so just coming here, yes. He's holding up five fingers because the Enneagram type on it is a five. And picking things apart with technicalities. But I just, like, my but the heart is just so happy to see you holding up those two things, because they are literally my companions right now.
Yeah. You know, the whole point of this is, Jesus says, I came to you might have joy. My joy be in you, and yours complete. Peace, he says, is my parting gift to you. Peace such as the world cannot give, I give to you. Well, this work is Christ is offering us to come to unqualified, peaceful presence in a very chaotic world. It's giving us ideas that come and rescue us. I had one rescue me last week. I hadn't thought of it in 40 years. And I was wrestling with this issue, and in it came. I am a child or manifestation of God. God works in me to will and to do what he would have me do, and God cannot fail. How many times did the younger Tim say that with feeling in traffic, in Denver traffic, over and over and over again? Those affirmations, when you groove them in, come back to serve you whenever you need them, and they're all in the background, acting anyway, like computer programs that are operating all the time, whether you see them or not. It's a good thing to do the basics and to do them again and again and again. And if you've been through the volumes 1 through 5, do it again. And if you've been through them again, do it again. Because each time we re-engage, we find that that idea has more meaning for us, because we come a little deeper in. And now we've got a new angle of view to see through when we see through this work idea. So please don't ever think we're finished, because as far as I can tell, until self dissipates, until there is no thinking at all, until there's no affect, until then, we've got work to do. Bernadette had this saying, if there's anything left, we must press on. If there's anything left, we must press on. We're emptying the self, kenosis, emptying the self of self by using work ideas to put light on what's going on, to study the way the centers trigger each other, hypnotize each other, to become anthropologists studying humanity through a laboratory of one, studying one of these. You'll understand all of them if you understand yours. Just bring light into it, see how it works, kind of get that the world is like it is because you're like you are. Yeah. If you're not really humbled to the point of almost embarrassment, you haven't looked yet. This is a totally humiliating journey. Stephen, please.
So, yes, thank you for being our teacher for so long, for so many of us.
And
I have a question, and I've been thinking about how to phrase it, but I really want to know. You're obviously a man who's passionate about God and wanting this more than anything else. And that's really the question is, and I know some of your past, and you know some of mine, and I certainly do have a passion for this, and I want to remember to want this more than anything else. How do you remember to want this more than anything else? How do you continue to want this more than anything else?
Well, quite simply, I've thought myself into a position where there's no recourse. That's all there is. How did that happen? Well, I got married 3 times, and all the same things kept happening, and I knew I was crazy. I mean, really, honestly, when you get a bunch of eyes switching through you, all using the word I, and you're convinced that it's you, and you're sowing seeds of chaos everywhere, you're insane. A therapist one day heard me say that. She said, Tim, they're wounded. You know what? I'd rather be seen as crazy than wounded, because wounded leaves me the victim, and you know, I can't do anything about it. She wounded me, she's so mean, and mom was mean, and my other wife was mean, and my other wife was mean. God, give me a break. You know, how about, this is insane. different things passing through with different voices, with different centers in which they're occupied, using my voice and sowing the seeds of lovelessness in my life. This is insane. That's how I became convinced that everything I was doing was bogus. The work showed me that. There was no way around it. And once you've seen, you can't go back, and it's perfectly safe to go ahead. God knew how to get us out of our moms. There were waiting, helping hands to deliver us out of our moms' bellies. There are helping hands waiting now. The conscious circle of humanity, the communion of saints, is at work to serve everything we do in the direction of the vertical, and the Holy Spirit. There are helping hands waiting now. The conscious circle of humanity, the communion of saints, is at work to serve everything we do in the direction of the vertical, and the Holy Spirit is there. And these work thoughts of steward and deputy steward, you're going to find those are real levels of consciousness, actual levels of consciousness. And they talk to you, and they lead you, and they teach you. Now, what is the basic thing that makes it possible to stay that way? It's doing the basics with the same intensity that you breathe. You must breathe. You must breathe. I must transform impressions. I must transform impressions. The air of spirit is denied me when I'm living in reactivity. I must breathe the free air of God. See, once we've tasted reality, then what are we going to do? Pretend this is okay when I can't relate to people? Or pretend it's okay if I have unacknowledged anger or fear? If I got fear, I want to feel it. Come up here. Oh, here's something I can share with you. When we were ministering at the Unity Church, I used to be subject to deep depressions, and they'd take me down, and sometimes it'd be for months. And I'd see them coming. I got wise enough to notice the signs of their impending arrival, of depression's arrival, and the main sign was that the words would appear in my mind, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to kill myself. Be no intention. I'd just be hearing the words, I'm going to kill myself. So that I saw that started happening, and because I'm a self-observer, I was aware of what was coming, and I was like, oh, shit, I go down the pits again. And I'd lost enough force where I did. I slid right down into the pits. So one Sunday morning, I couldn't get out of bed. I had a church to go to, three services to lead, and I couldn't get out of bed. And it was humiliating. It was embarrassing. It was like, this can't be real, but apparently it was real because I wasn't getting out of bed. So Barbara had not prepared anything, and I said to her, you're going to have to lead church today. And she's, okay. And when she went away, I sat there with my depression, and I followed work principles. It was like I took a highlighter, because I realized I had been so busy avoiding depression, denying depression, trying to live over the top of it, explaining it, getting out of it, I never stopped to notice what it really is. So I took my work highlighter and I outlined my centers. I looked at how I had been feeling, I looked at how I'm feeling now, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to do exactly what the work says. So I said to that depression, come here, come here. Love what it hates? Okay, get all over me. I want your ass. I'm serious. It felt like it showed down at the OK Corral. Because I've been running from it all my life. And so when I had it all over me, I lifted it up to God and I said, God, this is telling me it's bigger and more powerful than you are. And I haven't seen a depression since then. So it is in raising these issues to light and in feeling the feelings of fear or depression, just feeling them, that's how you defuse them. One day Bernadette was here, and 10th man school, as it was at the time. I think it's why we still lived in Kansas City, wasn't it? Yeah. Put on the most shameful minstrel show that I didn't know about for Bernadette Roberts on No Self, came. And I was like, I'd been preparing these people for months to receive Bernadette Roberts, and Bernadette Roberts, and as they do, it's like, oh my God. And she was insulted and wouldn't stay there at the retreat center. So she went up to Browder's house, where the place where the church started. And we went up there in the morning, and Barb and Bernadette were standing in a ray of sunlight over by the kitchen sink, and they were talking. And it was like a Vermeer painting. It was so beautiful. And I came up to the edge of the clearing just so I could overhear what was being said. And I hear Barbara saying, "Are you saying that when I see through something, it's done?" And Bernadette said, "The minute you have insight, it's undercut. The light undercuts the thing. Now, it may still wiggle for a while. If a plant gets pulled out of the soil, it's been undercut, may stay green for a little while. But the insight itself, the seeing through and the bearing of what is seen, are the whole cure for the disease of separation." Now, you can't do that without faith in the love of God for you personally. You're not going to tear down the edifice you built for safety so you'd be admired and feel powerful. You're not even going to go near that unless you already feel empowered or made safe by some greater force that loves you more than you could ever dream. So it's the insight and the willingness to feel your feelings and to really, really feel them. Go right in there. Come on, get all over me. What is this? I've been pushed around by you all my life. What the hell? I mean, come on, get outraged. Get indignant. One day I got this series of thoughts that have been plaguing me. And suddenly the lights came on and I saw them. And I said, "Ha! A disembodied voice. I have been pushed around by disembodied voices all my life. Hey, voice, I want to see your credentials. I want to see it in stone from God that you know what you're talking about." It was a real big step in self-observation to realize that God doesn't chatter in me. It chatters in me. And I am called to simply bear it with whatever degree of equanimity I can muster at any given moment. It's all learning. If you lose, you win. If you win, you win when you're doing self-observation. There is one thing I want to keep before us, and that's the center of gravity question. Do you have a center of gravity question? What is the purpose of a center of gravity question? Why would a human being want to have a center of gravity question? Where's my center of gravity when I'm reacting to somebody else? It's not in my heart. It's not in my belly. Where's my center of gravity when I'm made depressed by the news? Seems to be outside me in circumstances and conditions. I wonder, is there a question I could frame for myself? Almost like a talisman I could carry around with me that would help me ask myself a question that would center me and put my center of gravity back in my body where it belongs, where it's meant to be. Each of us has to come up with that for ourselves. You can't just study a book and think you're going to get the work. You're going to innovate, explore, have fun. Ask yourself questions and then listen to the levels of the beings that answer, the voices that answer in your head. It's a cartoon. And page 10, of course, you can't do anything from a sense of duty or heaviness, burdensomeness, but only with the lightsome touch of delight and wonder, the magic of getting to participate in this at all. Holy cow, what blessed people we are. I've got time for one more question, if anybody has one, or one more comment, or one more wish. Yes, go ahead, Nate.
I'm curious if you can shine a little bit of light on this notion of we can do. In my experience, our culture imprints that one on us considerably. And sometime after I get done with the sit in the morning, there's about 16 different eyes that start barking for attention.
Yes.
They look a lot like a dad eye or a son eye or a firefighter or a friend or much, much worse. And once I engage them, they typically have an associated stream that goes with it that looks and feels and tastes a lot like obligation.
Yes.
And then it feels like it is doing. And I step in that direction.
Yes.
And I start maybe claiming that it is doing. I am now making time for, this one is making time for a wife, or this eye is now making time for a son, or doing this, that, and the other. And can you, surely in building a church, there were eyes that had feelings of support systems or lights or sound systems. And can you talk some about how you wrestled with that one?
I willed what I could not help. And I have a strong wish. And I'm a maniac for keeping an aim. Once I saw what an aim did for me and how it kept me on the track I wanted to go and understood science, the mental science that's in the commentaries, you just do the next thing. Now, I believe you're a 9 personality type, and I'm a 9 personality type. So we hear all the things we have to do we haven't done yet. And they kind of are like those lazy Susans in the restaurant with all the tickets on them. They never stop. So we have to stop. And then we just have to ask for clarity. Conscious moment of taking a breath, and the next thing will come. But the other thing is, you can't help that, can you? What is it we're supposed to do with what we can't help?
Will it?
Yeah. Oh, look at this. 15 things lined up here, all crowding in, trying to get me believe they're me. But, hey, wait a minute. They've got names and forms and messages, and I am the formless, eternal spirit who is witnessing this. They have no power over me. They have no power over me at all. The mind has no power over us. If we have not exercised our relationship to mind, it's a good time to build a relationship. But the first thing you've got to do is get light into the darkness, and that means that you have to will all those little things. Well, look at that one go, and look at that one go. Isn't that interesting? And then pretty soon, God, I'm feeling crazy. I've lost a lot of force. Now I'm pissed at my kids. I just acted harshly. So you can follow that thread back to the clarity you were in just after you had your sit and watch the way you descended into identity and bring the light to it, like Bernadette said to Barbara. The light undercuts it. But it's a discipline not to try to fix it. You can't fix what ain't broke. It's not that it's broken, it's like it's got a fake identity. It's not your identity. So I hope you enjoyed being Nathan. I enjoyed being the Tim the whole time we were building this place. There were troubles, there were people, man. We had feelings and, man. There were a lot of feelings. And, you know, a lot of them didn't like me very well. Well, when you're an affection junkie, being denied that affection, perfect, just the way I wanted it. I'm being denied at home, I'm being denied here. God, it's just you and me, isn't it? Sure, that's all we need. You and God are a perfect team. Wherever you are, God is with you right then. So I would suggest, you know, doing your study of the guy, inspect him inside those roles, but also give him the power of some affirmations. I am a radiant child of the living God, mighty to attract my good and to radiate good to others. Say a word like that, and in a moment you've reset. You're sane again. And you can then prioritize the things that need to be done. And as one member of the church said when we were building the place, he said to the voice in his head, thank you for your input. That's very nice of you to say that. But he didn't want to deal with it. You don't have to deal with every voice. Just not identify. No voice is I. No form is I. No sound is I. No sensation is I. I is the knower and bearer of all names and forms, all sensations, and most wonderfully also of faith. I and faith are identical. You'll find I and faith are, and God all right there together like this. Now, faith is not knowing. Mr. Nickel talks about being in the classroom and the teacher said something stupid, and Nickel says, as a kid, I reckon this guy doesn't know anything. And then he said, nobody knows anything. Holy cow, nobody knows anything. Isn't that something? I don't know anything. They don't know anything. Wow, what an interesting situation to be awake in. Now, let's face it, if you're awake, you're not going to find much support for that awakeness. Nor are people going to say, wow, are you awake? Hey. Way to go, spiritual warrior. I've had all those eyes. You've got to know they plague everybody. They plague Mr. Nickel. See that little tugboat? I am the captain of the tugboat out to rescue the sinking ship. We're all caught in imagination. But once you see it, who cares? Who cares if the imagination chatters away? I am. I just am. And I was this way when I was a baby, and I was this way in the fifth grade, and I was this way at ninth grade, and this way in that marriage. I am the presence that is. You are the presence that is. No form contains you. No word describes you. And nothing can oppose you. You know, we read from Romans 8 at Lance's memorial today. There is nothing on this earth, and nothing in the principalities and powers, nothing under the earth or above the earth, there is nothing that can ever separate us from the love of God in Christ. And that's the truth. And everything that doesn't know that has a right to speak in our heads or react in our bellies, but we don't have to buy that I am that reaction. We don't have to buy I am that speech. It's just artifact. It's just static on the line. Work is offering us an opportunity to buy out of it, to make another kind of choice, to stand on these feet, to be this manifestation of the divine, to bear the ray of creation into our bodies and to let its light shine out into the world. It's a good deal any way you look at it, because dying before you die is a very intelligent option for participating in a world that's increasingly unstable and chaotic. So how can I ask myself that center of gravity question that'll keep me aligned with my aims, that'll keep me aligned with the teachings of the work that came down from heaven to rescue us, that came down to give us tools to bring us back to the light? Am I supposed to take up an offering? Do you take up an offering at this class? Okay. I've got to give you a name. The summary, the love what it hates It's very easy to dismiss that. And, oh yeah, love what it is. But you got to know what it is. This is, love is okay. You know, love is just saying yes. Yes. Love is yes. When you're in love, it's yes. But recognizing it is not so that easy. But it is a summary word for the 987 eyes and all the energies that occupy the non-natural negative part of emotional center. That's it. These contracted sensations of bodily tension, that's it. Love what it hates. Go straight into your conditioning and do the opposite. So put up with not having what you gotta have and study the creature under those conditions. And then put up with having what you don't want to have. Let's say somebody else's habit that just drives you insane. It's not you, it's it. Ah, accepting the unacceptable, bearing the unbearable, enduring the unendurable is the way. It is just the Christian way of incarnation. And we've got tools, and if you've got will, this place is going to take you home, 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 right where you wanted to go. So love what it hates, but let's make a focus on, well, what is it? Because it's a wonderful collective term. It's like a file folder that holds all the 987 eyes. You can move all of them around with one word, it. That's it. It will never be I. It wasn't I. It ain't gonna be I. It ain't I now. You're as free as you'll ever be right now if you know it, if you simply know it. Okay, stop me before I speak some more. You know, whenever we take our tithes and offerings in our hands, it's good to not only just see the object that's here, the tangible money substance or whatever, but to feel it in flow. To feel how supply has been flowing into us and through us all this time, so that when we bless these offerings, we know what we're doing. We're not just saying some words. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. Let's make our claim on reality together. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And oh, we are so blessed when we simply remember God. Amen. Do you enjoy this class? The Dalai Lama's brother observed this class, T.C., the Nari Rinpoche, when he was here. And he was hearing people own their stuff. He was blown away. He said, we can't get the monks to do this. They lie about their faults and hide them. Well, I don't know, you know, much about that way, but I know in the Christian way, it's bringing things to light, bringing things to the light of consciousness for healing. And the more vulnerable we are, and the more scathingly self-honest we are, the faster this work goes to its intended destination, which is nobody, becoming nobody on purpose. Awake now to outpourings of divine grace flooding down from the heavens like light. We dedicate these tithes and offerings to the victory of consciously chosen love in each of our lives and on our planet over the lie of separation and our useless acting out from fear. We pray this in Christ. Amen. It's been a gas. This has just been great. Say it again.
Thank you for being a friend.
You know, thank you for letting me be. What the heck? It's my last chance. When we, you know, I came from an Eastern background where the guru is special and set apart, and he's the guru and you're definitely not. Okay? And it's a prison for devotees who idealize the master, and for the master who has to deny his human side and his vulnerability, because there's nobody that's brass plated. Thomas Keating's first video says, "Your teacher has clay feet." So when we started this thing, there was a 10th man school meeting, and somebody wrote a song, and it was like, "Oh, Tim, wonderful Tim, you are the one made manifest for us." And I heard a verse of that. I said, "Stop. Stop. We can't go here. We cannot go here. It's a trap for everybody. Nobody's special. We are friends in love. And to find a group of people that are willing to let me just be this guy who also happens to know some things that are useful for building community for a life has been a marvelous privilege that I didn't have to get caught in a role. The guru is the loneliest guy on the planet because he's got to be more wonderful than everybody else. And as they grow, he has to keep getting more wonderful. And there's no end to it. Are you with me? So Christ comes down and he hangs out with everybody. He's just like everybody. And that's the genius or the gift of what has happened in this community. I did not have a plan. We did not know what we were doing. We just had a hunger. And it worked out really well. Because I do not like feeling, you know, do nines like feeling special? No. I like to hide. I like to be invisible. So this is the best we could do of keeping me liberated from roles. Now we find out, how does he do without the role? What's left? Who are they together without roles defining them? So hold us in your prayers while we grow into our next phase of unfoldment. And thank you for your continued interest in keeping this work alive in this church. You're beautiful souls, and I am utterly grateful for the friendship of every one of you. You have been real and true deep friends to both of us. And there's no way to tell you with the gratitude we feel. This has been a synergy, a synergistic coming together of traditions and human beings and the grace that somehow, some way did all this and invited us, lowly little us, just regular old us, ordinary person, to get free, to be utterly free. It doesn't like this. It does not like freedom. Are you with me?
Yes.
Love what it hates.
Yes.